What do you remember from the last chapter? This should be easy. What was the most significant thing that you remember from the last chapter? Not just anything, but what is the most significant thing?
The description of the Mahapurusha given in that chapter, we'll see the Lord in everybody's heart. Like Markandeya, because the question was, how did Markandeya get to see the Lord? And that was the Tantra revealed by Sudha Goswami's description of the Mahapurusha.
Tantra means literally process?
Means what?
Process.
Interesting. So what did you think about the pastimes of Markandeya Rishi? I found that so intriguing. What did you think about the pastime of Markandeya Rishi?
Actually, after he experiences all these things, he became very upset, actually. He said, why I ask this boon? Just 7 times when this Gopal was inhaling and exhaling, he goes and comes and goes and comes 7 times because he wanted to live for 7 kalpas, 7 days of Lord Brahma. So he got whatever he desired. But then he became upset, actually. Why he asked this boon? He was very exhausted. That's why Naranarayana Rishi came to give him some relief. And Lord Shiva and Parvati came to give him some boon. Actually, this is not what actually desired, which we should desire from the Lord.
Yes, I've heard that also. I also understand. I've heard that because it's even living for 7 lives of Manu, it still doesn't bring satisfaction to the soul. And rather, one gets tired. Anyone else? What struck you most about Markandeya Rishi and this pastime?
He actually attracted Naranara, attracted the Lord. Like in that saying of Bhaktisiddhanta, you don't try to see God, but you act in such a way that the Lord wants to see you. So the Lord wanted to see you.
One
two times. Life before, when he worried about the tiger, and this time.
How did he ward off the tiger? I forgot to mention that part, I think, by concentrating his consciousness on Govinda.
Warded off what?
A tiger. This was in the Pancharat. That he preached to his father that only whatever happens, if Krishna is protecting us, we get protected, and if Krishna doesn't protect us, we don't get protected. And then he went off to get some food, and there was a tiger who had also gone off to get some food. And they had a conflict. And even though he was terrified, the boy was terrified, he took shelter of Govinda. He brought Govinda into his consciousness. And the tiger left him alone. Of course, we have our devotee way of telling that joke, too. You know that one. Yes, that's a good one. It's so funny. It's also a Christian joke. They probably thought of it first, but they didn't say Sairavidida. But it's a funny joke. But what I'll tell you what struck me, yes?
I think it's the pastime of that whole story I find quite disturbing, because there he was in his hermitage concentrating on the Supreme Lord, and then he has this desire to see the material energy, which, I mean,
what's the part disturbing?
Well, I always try to listen how I was foolish enough to get down to this material world. You know, if we are with Krishna, and how can we get possibly have other desires and just remain with Krishna.
So what's the disturbing part?
Well, he had achieved so much and it took to the point of seeing the Lord, and then that was not enough. Like when Dhruva Maharaj saw the Lord, he forgot, he said, you know, I was looking for broken pieces of diamond, broken pieces of glass, and now I have found a diamond. He completely forgot his material desires.
Yeah, so he had his free will. But this isn't the purpose of this pastime. The purpose of the pastime is to teach us something very wonderful. And Adi, yes?
Sure, the attraction of the material energy, even after millions of births,
that can happen.
It, you know, come to the threshold of liberation and still be attractive, even though he's seen it so many times.
Yeah.
I think it teaches you to be careful what you ask for.
Yeah. But Adi Purusha Prabhu, he said what I thought. He noted something a few days ago that I had also noted, that about the connection between the first part. And the first story was in the 12th canto, was about whom? Prickit Maharaj leaves. So Prickit Maharaj found out that he had 7 days to live. And we have also heard about Katvanga Maharaj, who found out that he only had a moment to live. So what was Prickit Maharaj's conclusion?
Take shelter
of Lord Hari. So if you have 7 days to live, or you have 1 day to live, you take shelter of Lord Hari. And then if you have even 7 days of Manu to live, if you have a short time or you have the longest time of your life, the same conclusion is the one that's reached. Is that was Markandeya's, Rishi's conclusion, that I should take shelter of Lord Hari. I should put myself fully under his protection and in Krishna consciousness. So it doesn't make a difference if we have 15 minutes to live, or 1 minute to live, or 10 years to live, or 7 billion years to live. The same conclusion is the conclusion that we should reach, according to the Bhagavatam. Therefore, an intelligent person understanding this, he takes shelter of Lord Hari. That's one of the things I found most amazing about this canto, most inspiring and instructional, is that really we should take shelter of Lord Hari. And don't think that because I have so many years left that I should put it off. We should do it as soon as we come to consciousness, so to speak. Soon as we become conscious that here I am, alive and with consciousness, and my life is temporary. It's temporary either with 7 minutes to live, or 7 days to live, or 7 months to live, or 7 years to live, or 70 years to live, or 700 years to live, or 7,000 years to live, and, you know, the rest going up. But the same issue is presenting itself before everyone, that we are here temporarily and there is one mission in life, and there is one point of safety and shelter for us all, and that is to take shelter of Lord Hari. That's one of the... That's really the message of the Bhagavatam, the 12th of the whole Bhagavatam. And then it's the message of the 12 cantos, the two parts of it. And all the shastra, because all the shastras, that was the middle part, all the shastra is summed up in the Bhagavatam. And this is what the Bhagavatam is teaching us. So the sum of all shastra is this simple point, simple, unlimitedly deep, and unlimitedly wonderful is that we take shelter of Krishna and develop our relationship with him. So what do you think of that? What do you think of that? We have to be, we meet our fate, we each are individuals, we have our own fate, our own karma, our own circumstances that we'll have to deal with in our life. So in that we're all different, but in this point we're all the same. We have different services to perform, but in this point we're the same. We have to develop our relationship with Krishna to take shelter of him. What do you think? In one word, what do you think?
Me?
Yes, why not? Oh, that was your one word. Sorry. You only got one word. So in that sense, the Bhagavatam... I'll give you another chance. One word.
Krishna.
So now the Bhagavatam is over, and the 12th chapter of the 12th canto will be a summary, and then next chapter tomorrow is the conclusion, the concluding chapter. And speak the glories of the Bhagavatam, and this is a summary of the Bhagavatam. So, Namo Damaya Mahate Sutuvacha Nama Krishnaya Vedase Brahmane Bhyo Namaskritya Daman Vakshe Sanataram. Sutta Goswami said, offering my obeisances to the supreme religious principle, devotional service, Namo Damaya Mahate Nama Krishnaya Vedase. So they first, to the principle of devotional service, or the highest dharma, to the principle of religion, and this is the essential principle of religion that the Bhagavatam has spoken about from beginning to end, to obeisances to Lord Krishna, Namo Krishnaya Vedase, who is the supreme creator, and to all the brahmanas, Brahmane Bhyo Namaskritya Dharman Vakshe Sanatana. Now I shall describe the eternal principles of religion. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on this verse as follows. In the 12th chapter, beginning from the first canto, the famous stories are repeated in order for clarity. I offer my respects to the great Dharma known as Bhakti, dedicated to Krishna, who is attained by Bhakti, who is the cause of all things, Vedase, and the Brahmanas, like Vyasadev, who reveal Bhakti. I will speak the stories of the Lord, which is Dharma. These are the highest Dharma, since they are subjects of hearing and chanting. They are eternal, since the Lord Bhakti and his activities are beyond the three modes of material nature. 2. O great sages, I have narrated to you the wonderful pastimes of Lord Vishnu as you inquired about them from me. Hearing such narrations is the suitable engagement for a person who is actually a human being. So there's going to be some strong final instructions in these last two chapters, and very strong glorification of the very means of conquest, and that is the Srimad Bhagavatam. Atra sankirtitaha shakshad sarva papaharo hari narayano rishikesho bhagavan satvatam pati. This literature fully glorifies the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who removes all his devotees' sinful reactions. The Lord is glorified as Narayan, Rishikesh, and the Lord of the Sattvatis. So this is the result of hearing the Bhagavatam. And that is, what does the verse say is the result of hearing the Bhagavatam? I couldn't hear anyone loudly enough to know of... Sinful? Yes. Now what's the benefit of removing sinful reactions? Yes, the heart is cleansed. And what is there in the cleansed heart? It's just naturally the tendency to love Krishna, to serve Krishna. It's natural. Then, if that is the result of the Bhagavatam, and then we hear about Krishna from the Bhagavatam, then naturally we want... Because sinful reactions, they're based around the false ego. So when we become servants of Krishna, naturally all the sinful reactions are removed. And that's what the Bhagavatam does. It establishes us in the service of Krishna. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on text 3. He who removes all sins, Sarva Papa Haro Hari, who is the shelter of all the jivas, Narayana, who activates the senses, is Bhagavan, who is glorified in 12 volumes of the Bhagavatam. Who is he? He is the master of the Sattvatas and Satyavati. In one word, who is that? Yeah, anyway, you might have not heard anything, but you got the right answer anyway. 100% on the exam. Atra Brahma Param Guyam. This absolute truth is the supreme secret. Very confidential. Jagata Prabhavapyayam Gyanam Chetad Apakyanam proktam vigyana samyutam. This is very mysterious. Guyam means mysterious. And in this verse, beginning with this verse, up to text 45, there is a summary, just a listing of the different pastimes that are described in the Bhagavatam. This literature describes the mystery of the Supreme Personality, the Supreme Absolute Truth, the source of creation, annihilation of this universe. Everything comes from him, everything rests on him, and everything is withdrawn into him. Also presented are divine knowledge of him, together with the process of its cultivation, how to get this knowledge, and the transcendental realization when achieved, and the goal of knowledge as well. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, the impersonal Brahman is present in the Bhagavatam, since it cannot be perceived, because the Brahman doesn't have qualities. So how is it present in the Bhagavatam? If there are no qualities to describe, how could it be present? Since it cannot be perceived by the senses, such as the voice, how is it possible? It is described through creation and destruction of the universe, not directly. So this is because everything is resting on this Brahman. The method to attain Brahman, Jnan, is also revealed along with its realization. So that information is also there in the Bhagavatam. 5. The following topics are also narrated. The process of devotional service, together with its subsidiary features of renunciation, and the histories of Maharaj Prickett and the sage Narad. Comment to Vishnu. Sadhana and Sadhya Bhakti are explained completely with introductory and concluding actions, as well as renunciation, which arises from it. Then the topics are listed in order. One should not object to omitting parts of the stories which are famous in presenting a table of contents chapter. A table of contents makes no attempt to present everything. The famous chapter about Krishna's birth, the punishment of Asatthama, the passing of Bhishma, the story of Chitraketu, the destruction of Tripura, the story of Ambarish, the killing of Agasura, the bewilderment of Brahma, are omitted or passed over very briefly, and sometimes stories are put in a different order. So there's going to be Sutta is going to speak the contents of the Bhagavatam that he has just spoken as a matter of summary. Also describe a saintly King Pariksit sitting down to fast until death in response to the curse of the Brahmin son, and the conversation between Pariksit and Sukadeva Goswami, who is the best of all Brahmins. The Bhagavatam explains how one can attain liberation at the time of death by practicing fixed meditation in yoga, meditation upon Krishna. It also contains a discussion between Narada and Brahma, an enumeration. What canto is that? The conversation between Narada and Brahma? Second canto. And what does Narada ask Brahma? Lord Brahma? Yes. Because I see you performing austerities, and yet I see you as all-powerful supreme. So is there someone that you're performing austerities to please that's giving you the power to create what you are creating? And then Brahma's reply in the next few chapters explains the Supreme Lord, the Purusha. An enumeration of the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is also second canto. And a description of how the universe was created in progressive sequence, beginning from the unmanifested stage of material nature. 8. This scripture also relates the discussion Vidur had with Uddhava and with Maitreya. What canto? Inquiries about the subject matter of this Purana and the winding up of creation within the body of the Supreme Lord at the time of annihilation. The creation affected by the agitation of the modes of material nature, the 7 stages of evolution by elemental transformation, and the construction of the universal egg from which arises the universal form of the Supreme Lord. All these are thoroughly described in Canto 3. Other topics include the subtle and gross movements of time, the generation of the lotus from the navel of Garbhodaksha Vishnu, and the killing of the demon Hiranyaka when the earth was delivered from the Garbhodak ocean. What canto? 3rd canto. The Bhagavatam also describes the creation of demigods, animals, and demonic species of life, the birth of Lord Rudra, and the appearance of Swayambhuva Manu from the half-man, half-woman Ishwara. Who is the half-man, half-woman Ishwara? Who appeared? Swayambhuva Manu appeared from the so who is the half-man, half-woman Ishwara? Brahman. Why is he considered the half-man, half-woman Ishwara? Indeed, he is.
He's what?
Self-born. But also because from him came, which is described next, Satarupa, also, the first woman. Also related are the appearance of the first woman, Satarupa. It's also interesting to note that the first woman was a liberated woman, who was the excellent consort of Manu and the offspring of the pious wives of Prajapati Kardama. And she, Kardama was an offspring of her, it would seem, of Satarupa. And the offspring of the pious wives of Prajapati.
I think it's just one more.
First woman Satarupa, who was the excellent consort of Manu and the offspring, so it's not a parenthetical phrase, and the offspring, it's not describing Satarupa, but it's describing Devahuti, yes. The Bhagavatam describes the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the exalted sage Kapila, and records the conversation between that greatly learned soul and his mother Devahuti. After also describe the progeny of the 9 great brahmanas, the destruction of Daksha's sacrifice, and the history of Dhruva Maharaj. So what canto are we in now? Yeah, fourth canto. Followed by the histories of King Prithu, King Prachinibarhi, the discussion between Prachinibarhi and Narada, and the life of Maharaj Priyavrata. Who else is in there too that isn't mentioned in this part of the fourth canto?
Shiva.
Shiva. Prachetas, and their prayers to Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva gave them a wonderful song, Rudra Git. Then, O Brahmana, the Bhagavatam tells the character and activities of King Nabi, what canto? And Lord Rishab and King Bharat. Five, went to the fifth canto. The Bhagavatam gives an elaborate description of the earth's continents, regions, oceans, mountains, and rivers. Also described are the arrangement of the celestial sphere and the conditions found in the subterranean regions and in hell. What canto is that? Huh? Five. The rebirth of Prajapati Daksha as the son of the Prachetas. What canto is that? And the progeny of Daksha's daughters who initiated the race of demigods, demons, human beings, animals, serpents, birds, and so on. All this is described. That's the beginning of the sixth canto. O Brahmanas, also recounted are the births and deaths of Vitrasura and of Diti's son, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyagarbha, as well as the history of the greatest of Diti's descendants, the exalted soul, Prahlad. The reign of each Manu, the liberation of Gajendra, and the special incarnations of Lord Vishnu in each Manvantara, such as Lord Hayashirsha, are described as well. The Bhagavatam also tells of the appearance of the Lord of the universes, Korma, Matsya, Nasringa and Vamana, so these are in different cantos, and of the demigods churning of the milk ocean to obtain nectar. What canto is that in? Mm-hmm. Yeah. An account of the great battle fought between the demigods and the demons. That's in what canto? A systematic description of the dynasties of various kings and narrations concerning Ikshaku's birth, his dynasty, and the dynasty of the pious Sudumna are also presented within this literature, Canto 9. Also related are the histories of Ila and Tara. The son of Ila was Purarava, that's 9th Canto, Chapter 14. Tara was the grandmother of Purarava. And the description of the descendants of the sun god, including such kings as Shashada and Riga. The history of Sukanyu, Saryati, the intelligent Kukuksta, Kadvanga, Mandata, Sobari, and Sagra are narrated. The Bhagavatam tells the sanctifying pastime of Lord Ram, Ramachandra, the king of Kosala, and also explains how King Nimi abandoned his material body. The appearance of the descendants of King Janaka is also mentioned. The Bhagavatam describes how Lord Parsaram, the greatest descendant of Bhrigu, annihilated all the Kshatriyas on the face of the earth. It further recounts the lives of glorious kings who appeared in the dynasty of the moon god, kings such as Ayla, that's Purarava again, Jayati, Nahusha, Dushmanta's son Bharat, Shantanu, Shantanu's son Bhishma, also described as the great dynasty founded by King Yadu, the eldest son of Jayati. So that's the 9th canto. Now the 10th canto. How Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Lord of the Universe, descended into this Yadu dynasty. How he took birth in the home of Vasudev and how he then grew up in Gokul. All this is described in detail. Also glorified are the innumerable pastimes of Sri Krishna, the enemy of the demons, including the childhood pastimes of sucking out Putana's life air along with her breast milk, breaking the cart, trampling down Trinavarta, killing Bakasura and Vatsasura and Agasura, and the pastimes he enacted when Lord Brahma hid his calves and cowherd boyfriends in a cave. The Srimad Bhagavatam tells how Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram killed the demon Dhanukasura and his companions, how Lord Balaram destroyed Palambasura, and also how Krishna saved the cowherd boys from a raging forest fire that had encircled them. Where did that take place?
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Kaliyadaha was where the actually Kali was chased away. And
this one though. This is one's right after the killing of Palambasura. No? It's on the other side. Davanala Kund is the Kaliya one.
As a set of Yamuna.
Yeah, Bandiravan in that area. Bandiravan, Mantavali, something like that. Because all the reeds that were growing there, the Yamuna was obviously a little closer to it at that time, but it's in the Bandiravan area. The chastisement of the serpent Kaliya, the rescue of Nanda Maharaj from a great snake, the severe... Where did that take place? Nanda Maharaj rescued from a great snake? Huh? Ambikavan. The severe vows performed by the young gopis. What chapter? It's 22nd chapter. Who thus satisfied Lord Krishna, the mercy he showed to the wives of the Vedic Brahmins who felt remorse. The Brahmanas were the ones who felt remorse. The lifting of Govardhan Hill, followed by the worship and bathing ceremony performed by Indra in the Sarabi cow, that's chapter 27. Lord Krishna's nocturnal pastimes with the cowherd girls. What does nocturnal mean?
Nighttime.
And the killing of the foolish demons, Sankachuda, Arista, and Keshi. All these pastimes are elaborately recounted. The Bhagavatam describes the arrival of Akrura, the subsequent departure of Krishna and Balaram, the lamentation of the gopis, and the touring of Mathura. When Krishna got to Mathura, Akrura invited him to come to his house, and Krishna said, a little later, after my work of killing Kamsa is done. He also told that to Kubja, and indeed, in the 48th chapter, he visited both of them after Kamsa is killed. But soon as Krishna entered Mathura, he toured all over the city, and all giving all the people of Mathura a chance to see him. And when they saw, because they had heard about Krishna previously, but now they were seeing him and they felt so happy. Why did they feel happy? Because they were seeing Krishna.
And they had heard about him a lot.
Yeah, they had heard about him. Now they had seen him. Also narrated are how Krishna and Balaram killed the elephant Kuvalaya Pita. Oh, he was a powerful elephant. The wrestlers, Mustika and Chanura, and Kamsa and other demons, as well as how Krishna brought back the dead son of his spiritual master, Sandipani Muni. Then, O Brahmana, this scripture recounts how Lord Hari, while residing in Mathura in the company of Uddhav and Balaram, performed pastimes for the satisfaction of the Yadu dynasty. He protected the Yadu dynasty from Mathura from which demon? That specific demons are specifically mentioned that he protected Mathura from. Darsanda and Kaliyavan. And who was Kaliyavan's father? Garga Muni, Garga Rishi. He wanted to give the Yadavas trouble because they had insulted him. And it caused the killing of the barbarian king Kaliyavana and the establishment of Dwarka city. This work also described how Lord Krishna brought from heaven the Parijata tree and gave it to whom? And the Sudama assembly hall, and how he kidnapped Rukmini by defeating all of his rivals in battle. Also narrated how Lord Krishna in the battle with Banasura defeated Lord Shiva by making him yawn, and how the Lord cut off Banasura's arms, and how he killed the master of Prag, Jyotishapur, and then rescued the young princesses he had held captive in that city, that's Bomasura. There are the descriptions of the powers and death of King of Chedi. What is another name for the King of Chedi? What is his name? Sisupa. Pondraka, Salva, and the foolish Dantavakra, Sambara, Vidvid. Who killed Sambara? Yes. Vidvid Pita. I don't know who Pita is. Mura. Panchajana, and other demons, along with the description of how Benares was burned to the ground. The Bhagavatam also recounts how Lord Krishna relieved the earth's burden by engaging the Pandavas in the battle of Kurukshetra. How the Lord withdrew his own dynasty on the pretext of the Brahmin's curse. Now we're into the 11th canto. Vasudeva's conversation with Narada within the opening chapters of the 11th canto. The extraordinary conversation between Uddhava and Krishna, which reveals the science of the self in complete detail and elucidates the religious principles of human society. And then how Lord Krishna gave up this mortal world by his own mystic power. The Bhagavatam narrates all these events. This work also describes the people's characteristics and behavior in the different ages. The chaos men experience in the age of Kali. And you remember that? Do you remember that? The chaos? Do you remember reading that and hearing that? Did you like it? It's not pleasant, the age of Kali. And the four kinds of annihilation and the three kinds of creation. There was also an account of the passing away of the wise, saintly king Vishnuratta Prakrit, an explanation of how Srila Vyasadeva disseminated the branches of the Vedas, a pious narration including Markandeya Rishi, we're right up to the present, and a description of the detailed arrangement of the Lord's universal form and his form as the sun, the soul of the universe. O best of the Brahmanas, I've explained herewith what you have inquired for me. This literature has glorified in full detail the activities of the Lord's pastime incarnations. Lila avatar kamani kitit tani hasar visha. So he has inquired, Prakrit Maharaj inquired from Shonaka Rishi, asked questions at the beginning of the Bhagavatam, and all the questions have been answered. Tell us about Krishna, tell us about all the Leela avatars. Everything has been answered. And now, he says, and there's some comments about these that we'll hear. Now there's some verses, important verses. Patita skalitas charta. So after hearing all this about the Bhagavatam, Chutvava Vishvaso Grinan Haraye Nama Ityuchar Muchante Sava Patakat. If when falling, slipping, feeling pain or sneezing, one involuntarily cries out in a loud voice, obeisances to Lord Hari, Haraye Nama. Just by doing this, after hearing the Bhagavatam and hearing this, if one even casually, practically unconsciously, but somehow or another, calls out the name of Lord Hari and offers obeisances, one will be automatically freed from all his sinful reactions. Purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that Lord Sri Chaitanya is always loudly chanting the song Haraye Nama Krishna in the courtyard of Srivas Thakur, and that this same Lord Chaitanya will free us from our materialistic enjoying propensities if we also loudly chant the glories of the Supreme Lord Hari. Now, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on 46 as follows. 47, rather. Please tell us the results of glorifying such pastimes, because we've up to 46 was a glorification of the different, or re-mentioning of the different pastimes of Krishna. So please tell us the result of glorifying such pastimes. He answers by Kamutya Nyaya. If just chanting the name of the Lord casually does so much, how much more chanting the pastimes of the Lord with faithfulness, with faith, what will that bestow upon us? If one falls from a high place or stumbles on uneven ground, experiencing pain on displacing the feet, or sneezes or cries out loudly from witnessing or committing a terrible sin, and chants the name of the Lord, one is freed from all sins or reactions to sins. 48. When people properly glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or simply hear about His power, so if people properly glorify the Lord or hear about His power, so speaking or hearing, the Lord personally enters their hearts and cleanses away every trace of misfortune, just as the sun removes the darkness or a powerful wind drives away the clouds. So what is the result of properly? Because there was casually described in the last verse, if you chant, practically speaking, when something else is going on and then you chant the names of the Lord, all sinful reactions removed. And here, by properly glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or simply hearing about His power, this is what happens. The Lord personally enters that person's heart and cleanses away even away every trace of misfortune. That's what happens. What do you think about that? Pretty good. And then two examples are given. One telling a little bit more than the second one telling a little more than the first. Just as, so Krishna removes the misfortune from the heart, just as the sun removes the darkness. And the problem, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the purport says, is that if there are clouds, then the sun doesn't remove the darkness, or the darkness in a cave or something, but a powerful wind will drive away the clouds. So another example is given. If the clouds come, the sun does not destroy darkness. Therefore, another example is given. A powerful wind destroys clouds. 49. Words, and these verses you will remember, or the verses that are coming. The glorification of the Bhagavatam, more glorification of this transcendental literature. It is a transcendental literature. It makes, by hearing it and giving attention to it, it makes us transcendental. Krishna will enter our hearts and remove all inauspiciousness. Which verse was that similar to? No? One, yeah, that's Shinvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Rudyanta Sto. He enters the heart, Yabhadrani, and all the inauspiciousness. Vidunoti Saritsatam. He enters the heart and removes all the Abhadrani, all the inauspiciousness from within the heart. Now, the glories of the transcendental literature. Words that do not describe the transcendental personality of Godhead, but instead, those words that deal with temporary matters are simply false and useless. Only those words that manifest the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Lord are actually truthful, auspicious, and pious. So how beneficial then is the Srimad Bhagavatam? Here is the purport of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, text 49, his comment. The conclusion of this scripture is that one should glorify Krishna. And the Krishna consciousness movement is meant specifically for this purpose, to speak about Krishna and glorify Krishna, and to tell others that this is what everyone should be doing, glorifying God. That is, because what is the Sanskrit word for glorification of God? Kirtan. So this is what our International Society for Krishna Consciousness has been invested by Srila Prabhupada to do. Spread and personify the Sankirtan movement. And Prabhupada even said in a letter, without preaching, the institution becomes
rubbish.
Rubbish. So heavy. What is the meaning? Is it's useless, isn't it? This is the purpose of it. But without purity, there won't be any force. So we have to practice what we preach. This is our goal, to practice what we preach and then preach what we practice. And then be happy in our Krishna consciousness. Glorification of the Lord, Vishwanath continues. The conclusion of the scriptures that one should glorify Krishna. Other glorification, though even if it's not badly done, should not be done. And glorification of the Lord, even done badly by animalistic men, should be done. Did you catch that? That even if someone can glorify something else wonderfully, it shouldn't be done. And even if a bad type of a person glorifies Krishna poorly, it should be done. Though the words are true, they are false of the materialistic people glorifying something other than Krishna. Though the words are sweet, they are painful. Even if the words are uttered by learned persons, they are useless. Why? Because they do not speak about Bhagwan. Thus, two words are false, sweet words are harsh, and learned words are useless. If the words are false because they come from one's imagination, but they glorify the Lord, then the words are true. Though the words are inauspicious because they destroy the householder's world, they are actually auspicious words. And although the irreligious say that speeches describing how the Lord takes others' wives, how the Lord takes the wives of others is impure, it is pure, because those indicate good qualities in the Lord, not faults. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he gives us special and wonderful comments on the Bhagavatam. Those words describing the glories of the all-famous personality of Godhead are attractive, relishable, and ever fresh. Indeed, such words are a perpetual festival for the mind, and they dry up the ocean of misery. Comment by Vishwanath. Though Krishna, following Prasena, went into Jambavan's cave, is not pleasant, because it was a dangerous situation for Krishna. It is also pleasant. Though Rama's giving up Sita is not pleasurable, it is also pleasurable. Though the stories of the Lord are old, they're ever new. Though Rama's pursuing Maricha and Ravana, stealing Sita, destroys the happiness of the mind, it is also a festival for the mind. Though one falls into an ocean of lamentation from seeing Krishna giving up wives and sons, the event also dries up the ocean of lamentation. So very mysterious are the transcendental pastimes of the mysterious personality of Godhead. 51. Those words that do not describe the glories of the Lord, who can alone sanctify the atmosphere of the whole universe, are considered to be like unto a place of pilgrimage for crows, and are never resorted to by those who are situated in transcendental knowledge. The pure and saintly devotees take interest only in topics glorifying the infallible Supreme Lord. So these are in the fifth chapter of the first canto, the 10th and the 11th verses. So there's some verses that are almost the same as those verses. On the other hand, that literature which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, forms, pastimes, and so on of the unlimited Supreme Lord is a different creation. They are not created of the material elements. The words describing Krishna are from a different realm. They are full of transcendental words directed towards bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest.
Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will read his comment on the 52nd verse. Verses 51, 52, and 53 glorify the supreme position of the devotees. They are placed at the beginning and end of the Bhagavatam. Just as a great mantra has a bija syllable placed before and after it, so the Bhagavatam is enclosed within these three verses at the beginning and end of the work. And then 53, which is the third of these verses. Nice. Karmyam appachutta bhava varjitam na sobhate jnanam alam naranjanam kutapuna jasvara badram ishvare nahi arpitam karma yarapanuttamam. Knowledge of self-realization, even though free from all material affinity, does not look well if devoid of a conception of the infallible of God. So even if one is practicing niskam, is detached from this world, and if one is propagating it, it is not sufficient, it's not good in and of itself, because it is devoid of the conception of the infallible, of the Supreme Lord. So if niskam is not truly worthy, then what to speak of? What then is the use of even the most properly performed fruitive activities? So if detachment is useless, what to speak of fruitive attachment, which are naturally painful from the very beginning, and they are transient, they are temporary by nature, if they are not utilized for the devotional service of the Lord. Come up, yadap, panutamam. So this in the previous verses from the fifth chapter of Narada's words, in the fifth chapter, when Srila Vyasadeva, of the first canto, where Srila Vyasadeva has some despondency, and he asks his Guru Maharaj about the cause of his despondency, and Narada Muni replies that you have not talked about Krishna directly. And therefore, Vyasadeva, after hearing these instructions and hearing the life of Lord Brahma, but Narada Muni in his previous life, and after hearing of the uselessness of all the ritualistic activities of the Vedas and the Upanishadic detachment and jnanam points, what does he do? He writes the Bhagavatam after his deep meditation in the beginning of the seventh chapter of the first canto, and he realizes the nature of the Lord, the nature of Maya, and how the jivas, all these are part of the Supreme Absolute Truth, and Maya's job is to bewilder the souls, and he has a full revelation of this, and then based on that revelation, he writes the Srimad Bhagavatam.
There's a comment in Bhakti Sandarbha on this, on the 53rd verse. Let's see if I can find it. Yes. He includes a comment by Srila Sridhar Swami, and the point is that jnana is insufficient, in case we haven't understood this point already, by the end of the Bhagavatam, because otherwise we'll have to just start all over again. But jnana is insufficient. And Sridhar Swami comments on this verse. This verse explains that devotional service, which begins with hearing the glories of the Lord, is more important than speculative knowledge, jnana, or fruit of work, karma. Here, naishkamyam means Brahman. Yajjanam means the path that reveals Brahman, and Naranjana means free from material designations. If this path that removes all the designations and concepts, false concepts of the soul, but if it is devoid of the concept of God, achutta bhava varjitam, it does not look well, na shobhate, it is not beautiful. That means that the Supreme Lord will not become revealed by following such a path. That is the comment of Srila Sridhar Swami from that Jiva Goswami includes in Bhakti Sandarbha on page 87.
Then text 54. The great endeavor one undergoes in executing the ordinary social and religious duties of the Varnashrama system, in performing austerities and hearing from the Vedas, it culminates only in the achievement of mundane fame and opulence. But by respecting and attentively hearing the recitation of the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Lord, the husband of the Goddess of Fortune, she's even attracted him. He attracts all fortune. So by hearing of his qualities, and what is attractive about Krishna? His qualities, which includes his name and form and pastimes, paraphernalia, etc. So by hearing of the transcendental qualities of the Lord, one can remember his lotus feet. So there's a comment in Bhakti Sindhavan, Anuchet 88, on this verse as well. So to bring out the point that this is what we should do, is hear about and engage in the processes that result in our hearing and remembering Krishna. So Jiva Goswami comments. He again quotes, which was also the message of, this is what Maharaj Prickett understood. Right before he left, he said, now I understand what I have to do. I have to just focus my consciousness on Krishna. So this is the conclusion that Sutta Goswami wants us to reach too, which is the conclusion that we were talking about as what we heard from Maharaj Prickett, with a short life of only 7 days, so unfortunate, only 7 days. And then does that make Markandeya Rishi? Someone who lives for 7 days is unfortunate, and someone who lives for seven manvantaras is fortunate? No, the fortunate is to come to the right conclusion. And the conclusion is that we should remember, focus our consciousness on, hear about Krishna. This is the message of the Bhagavatam, and it gives us the content so we can do this as well. So on this verse, Srila Srila Swami comments, Srila Jiva Goswami includes the comment of Srila Srila Swami. The activities of Varnashrama Dharma are performed with great labor, but still they bring only material fame and material opulence. They do not bring the highest goal of life. The highest goal of life is to attentively hear the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Lord, the husband of the Goddess of Fortune, and remember his lotus feet. Very direct and pointed, and such suitable summary verses. Then Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on 54. Excuse me?
What was that last comment
by? By Srila Srila Swami. And Srila Jiva Goswami has included it in Bhakti Sundarbha. I'm thinking, if you want to know the Anucheta, I can tell you. If you don't want it, I can tell you anyway. It's 88, Anucheta 88 of Bhakti Sindhava. And then the 54th Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. The process of hearing about the qualities of the Lord makes one always remember the lotus feet of the Lord. That person never forgets the Lord's lotus feet. He also repeated some of the points earlier. Then, 55. Remembrance. So hearing about, chanting about. Now remembrance of the Lord's lotus feet destroys everything inauspicious and awards the greatest good fortune. It purifies the heart and bestows devotion for the Supreme Soul, along with knowledge enriched with realization and renunciation. So more potent still. One of our acharyas has commented, I think Vishwanath did, and this is, and and it's actually our Gaudiya Vaishnava conclusion that this is remembrance of Krishna's lotus feet is so powerful and more powerful than Smaranam is Kirtanam. Sankirtan. So what, the effect of Sankirtan is so wonderful. Then 56. O most eminent of Brahmins. This is Sutta speaking to Shonakarishi. All the other Brahmins there. You are all indeed extremely fortunate, since you have already placed within your hearts Lord Sri Narayana, the personality of Godhead, the supreme controller and the ultimate soul of all existence, beyond whom there is no other God. You have undeviating love for him, and thus I request you to worship him. Bhakti Sundarbha, again, comment by Srila Sridhar Swami that Jiva Goswami includes in Anuchet 90. He's glorifying the audience because they've heard Bhagavatam and therefore they are so glorious already. In these two verses, he addresses the hearers. He says, O most eminent of Brahmanas, please always worship Lord Narayan, who has entered your hearts. The verb here is respectfully used in the imperative mood. Respectful, but yet imperative. The word buri bhagaha means that they have performed many pious deeds. What is the Lord like? He is the super soul present in the hearts of all. That's who they should worship. The Lord who should be worshipped by all is the supreme Lord beyond whom there is no other. What is he like? He is the supreme controller. Therefore you, who are fortunate because you have performed many austerities and other pious deeds, should worship Lord Narayan. Bhajata Narayanam. And Jiva Goswami's comment on this is that the fruit of all austerities is to take Krishna consciousness. And if one performs all, the result of, you know, same point, this is Sridhar Swami's intention is summarized by Jiva Goswami, is that if you perform so many austerities and difficult deeds, what are you going to get? The real gain is to worship the Lord. And if you worship the Lord directly, you gain all the results that are possible to gain from any other process in all austerities. In 57. I also have now been fully reminded of the science of God. So in the two verses before, Sutta is speaking to the audience, and now he's, and the results of having heard Bhagavatam for them, and now he's speaking about himself. I also have now been fully reminded of the science of God, which I previously heard from the mouth of the great sage Sukadev Goswami. I was present in the assembly of great sages who heard him speak to Maharaj Prickett as the monarch sat fasting until death. So this, anyone who has spoken the Bhagavatam has experience of this, but speaking Bhagavatam, Jiva Goswami says, is fortunate, for it brings the subject matter to the forefront of one's mind. So one's consciousness becomes filled by the process of speaking. And then he says, Jiva Goswami says, I have been reminded of the supreme truth, Lord Narayan, who is present in the hearts of all, and now I yearn to attain him. That is the meaning of this verse. He says, from the mouth of the great sage, means Sukadev, I heard about the supreme truth. And now, after speaking, I'm reminded of him, and I yearn to attain him. That means Krishna. O Brahmanas, this is text 58. I've thus described to you the glories of the Supreme Lord Vasudeva, whose extraordinary activities are most worthy of glorification. This narration destroys all that is inauspicious. One who with undeviating attention constantly recites this literature at every moment of every hour, as well as one who faithfully hears even one verse or half a verse or a single line or even half a line, certainly purifies his very self. It's So Prabhupada would say, when he was stressing book distribution, he would say that even if they see one line, they'll be so greatly benefited, can change their lives. So here's where Prabhupada got that point from. One who hears this Bhagavatam on the Ekadasi or Dwadasi day is assured of long life, and one who recites it with careful attention while fasting is purified of all sinful reactions. One who controls his mind, fasts at the holy place Pushkar, Mathura, or Dwarka, and studies this scripture will be freed from all fear. Upon the person who glorifies this Purana by chanting or hearing it, the demigods, sages, siddhas, pittas, manus, and kings of the earth bestow all desirable things. By studying this Bhagavatam, a brahmana can enjoy the same rivers of honey, ghee, and milk he enjoys by studying the hymns of the Rig, Yajur, and Samavedas. Is that appealing? The Brahmins will want to enjoy it. The Vaisyas will want to bottle it and sell it. In other words, why study anything else? Just study the Bhagavatam. A brahmana who diligently reads this essential compilation of all the Puranas will go to the supreme destination, which the Supreme Lord Himself has herein described. And what is that supreme destination? Yes, you're all right. A brahmana who studies the Srimad Bhagavatam achieves firm intelligence in devotional service. A king who studies it gains sovereignty over the earth. A Vaishya acquires a great treasure, and a Sudra is freed from all sinful reactions. Because the fixedness of in devotional service and attraction is all these things. There are no sinful reactions, it's the greatest treasure, and you rule. You don't have any competitors in this world. Lord Hari, the supreme controller of all beings, annihilates the accumulated sins of the Kali age, yet other literatures do not constantly glorify him. But that supreme personality of Godhead appearing in his innumerable personal expansions is abundantly and constantly described throughout the various narrations of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, the Lord is the destroyer of the accumulated sins of Kali. Other works glorify karma and devatas like Brahma. Akhilesha means the soul within the universal form, Narayan, or the protector of the world, Vishnu. These works do not glorify Vishnu. If they do, it is not very much. The word too indicates restriction. In the Bhagavatam alone, Bhagavan, who has unlimited forms like Narayan, is profusely glorified. This is not done in other works. No such considerations have been made. By all topics introduced in every line, Bhagavan is glorified completely. I bow down to that unborn and infinite supreme soul whose personal energies affect the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material universe. Even Brahma, Indra, Shankara, and the other lords of the heavenly planets cannot fathom the glories of that personality of Godhead. Is that true? That even Brahma, Indra, and Shankara, and the other lords of the heavenly planets cannot fathom the glories of that the Supreme Lord? Brahma couldn't fathom them, couldn't understand how the Supreme Lord could be that cowherd boy. And Indra could not understand that boy who was trying to stop his jagya. And how about Shankara? Huh? But how about in Braja? Or in Krishna's pastimes? He had to fight with him. Yeah. And the other lords of the heavenly planets. Very difficult. The devatas could not understand. Very difficult to understand this Krishna who is glorified in the Bhagavatam. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur
comments, and this is his last comment in this chapter that we'll read. No, it isn't. We'll read more. He offers respects to the Lord who has created this scripture. He offers respects to the Lord who has created the scripture. I bow to the unborn. Are you offering respects to Brahma? No. I offer respects to the unlimited. Is that the Pradhan? No. He is the very form of consciousness. Is that the Jiva? No. He possesses powers for creating, maintaining, and destroying the universe. Is that Shiva? No. The praises of the Devatas such as Brahma and Shiva do not understand him. He is Achyuta. He is Krishna. I offer my obeisances, 68, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the eternal Lord and the leader of the other deities, who by evolving his 9 material energies has arranged within himself the abode of all moving and non-moving creatures. He's arranged it within himself. How has he done that? The abode of all moving and non-moving creatures is within Krishna. Mother Yashoda saw that when she looked in Krishna's mouth. And simultaneously, it's outside of Krishna. But how can anything be outside of Krishna? Because everything exists only in Krishna. He has a chintya shakti. And who is always situated in pure transcendental consciousness. So this is perfect vision, seeing how everything is situated within Krishna. This is the vision, Srila Jiva Goswami says, of a Mahabhagavat. He sees nothing as separate from Krishna. Nothing is separate from Krishna. Not affected by the modes of material nature, he sees that nothing is separate from Krishna. The modes of material nature, Maya, makes us see this world and ourselves as if we are separated from Krishna. But that is illusion. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. He just names the shaktis that are mentioned, that the 9 material energies that are within him. Prakriti, Purusha, Mahatattva, Ahankar, and the 5 objects of senses, the tanmatras. And then the final verse in this 12th chapter.
Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto my spiritual master, the son of Vyasadev, Sukadev Goswami. It is he who defeats all inauspicious things within this universe. Although in the beginning he was absorbed in the happiness of Brahman realization and was living in a secluded place, giving up all other types of consciousness, he became attracted to the pleasing, most melodious pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna. He therefore mercifully spoke this supreme Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the bright light of the absolute truth and which describes the activities of the Lord. Purport. Without offering respectful obeisances to Sukadeva Goswami and other great acharyas in his line, one cannot possibly gain the privilege of entering into the deep transcendental meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam.
And there is a comment by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that we shall respect by hearing. Having offered respects of Krishna, he offers respects to his guru. Sukadev's heart was completely filled with the bliss of Brahman. Because of that, his mind was devoid of other subjects. But though he had achieved this state, he became strongly attracted by the pleasing pastimes of Krishna. Thus his mind was drawn away from Brahman, and he became capable of tasting rasa. He realized that the taste of Krishna's pastimes was sweeter than Brahman. He became fixed in those pastimes. The rasa of Krishna's pastimes was not an obstacle which broke his samadhi. By that, he could have tried for the goal of samadhi. But he did not do that. Rather, by his mercy, desiring that others should taste Krishna's pastimes, he spread the Bhagavatam, which reveals the nature of the rasa of the pastimes of Krishna. Sukadev, the son of Vyas, whose mind became disrupted from Brahman trance by the qualities of Krishna, and who became attracted to the Vaishnavas, studied this great Bhagavatam. That's from the 7th chapter. After Vyasadev realized that he spoke to Sukadev in this verse, Hari Ganuk Chitta Matir Bhagavan
Bhattarayani Adyagan Maharakyanam Nityam Vishnu Janapriya, and he became dear to the Vaishnavas. Though I was fixed in Brahman and beyond the gunas, my mind became attracted to the pastimes of the Lord. I thus learned of his pastimes. Okay, so that's the end of this 12th chapter. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? It is late. Everyone has been patient. And mostly attentive.
I find it difficult to understand how Lord Rama, Lord Shiva, and all these great personalities can't understand Krishna. I know Krishna is not understandable fully by anybody, and yet somebody who submissively hears can understand Krishna and enter into his pastimes. Because Lord Shiva is no turn to yoga, which is like a different category to living entity altogether. It just seems very mysterious.
Yes.
And yet it's called Vaishnava Yatasham, the greatest Vaishnava.
But can Shiva enter into the deepest pastimes of Krishna? Can Lord Shiva enter? He has to become the guardian of the rasa dance arena, and he allows other people in. But just see how wonderful it is. And when Lord Shiva gets the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wants to taste the flavor of the service of Mahaprabhu, and then he comes as? Who does he come as?
Advaita Acharya.
Whose appearance day happens to be? He wants to adopt the serving mood towards Krishna, and Lord Chaitanya treats him with respect.
There's a similar passage in the third canto where Lord Brahma says that even this creative energy I do not understand, nor even Krishna understands. Even Krishna does understand his full glory, his own glory, but to speak about others.
But by hearing from the greatest devotees, we can get a glimpse. But what, can explain again exactly what, that how could someone so exalted?
Yeah, I mean, to actually...
What is the qualification for gaining entrance? So demigods, devatas, they have a different sense. Why can't Lakshmi enter?
Because she's attached to her position.
She has a different sense of herself, who she is. So that's, she has a sense of herself, that's the attachment. She's attached to her position. She has a sense of herself as the opulent goddess of fortune. So the qualification for entering into the highest pastimes of Krishna is that Mahaprabhu described as Gopi Bharta Parakamalaya Dasa Dasa Nadas. One has to have a different sense of oneself. And the whole process of bhakti, especially on the higher levels, is meant to completely change. First levels is to stop our identification, our sense of self, of the body, of the mind, etc. And ultimately a false ego. And then there's the positive. And the only way one can enter in is that when one identifies with being a resident, one of the residents of Vrindavan,
servant of the residents of Vrindavan. So that's what Lakshmi Devi couldn't do. She couldn't give up that identity to adopt this identity. Uddhava performed austerities to be able to do that. The wives of the brahmanas who were just on the borderline of Mathura, they couldn't quite do it. Because there's some concept of brahmana, something, not really, but something. So Mahaprabhu's point is that Gopi Bharta Parakamalayo Dasa Dasa Nidas. The sages of Dandakaranya, they could do it. The Municharis, they could do it. They gave up their complete conceptions of who they were and changed it to being like a resident of Vrindavan. Now, what do you think of that? So then, perhaps your point is, well, then why didn't they do that? The great demigods. But then you can ask them.
Yeah, I can understand.
It's a matter of attraction. And that attraction rules. And when one is so attracted, he's willing to give up everything for that, then he'll do it. But if one maintains any other sense, his attraction won't be strong enough to do it. Remember when the Prajagopikas heard the sound of Krishna's flute? They went completely mad. They took the babies and, you know, they were completely insane, practically speaking, with their desire. Kamanuga. Kamatmika, rather. They became Krishna consciousness is it's an amazing process. But it's completely deep. It's full. So we at the edge of the ocean of Bhakti Rasa, at the very, very edge, maybe looking through our binoculars, you know, we can see the edge of the ocean. We can see, how is this possible? How is that possible? Is this like that? But it doesn't have anything to do with those things. It has to do with complete absorption caused by taste and love. That's why it's bhakti. It's based on love. But love to the degree of complete absorption, where nothing else matters. Because of... Go ahead.
Even we get the position of Brahma, Shiva, so it's actually we cannot go to Krishna. So maybe this is another way to see. Like, not attached with all these things, become Shiva or Shiva, so keep us away from Krishna.
Any other comments?
This raises a question. If complete absorption is perfection, then it can keep improving. So, what is the nature of that? That maybe Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and other demigods, is that because a person can go back to Godhead without becoming, you know, completely absorbed like that? So, what?
Wait a second. A person can go back to Godhead without becoming completely absorbed?
In the same way as the gopis.
Well, it's the same way as any of the residents of Vrindavan. You think a person can go back to Godhead without being a Krishna conscious?
Well, this is my question. If they're not completely absorbed, what is that lack of absorption? What is the nature of that lack of absorption? he seems to be distracted to some degree to some other attraction. And, you know, because I'm conditioned, I can only think that, you know, they've got some selfishness. But obviously, to go back to the Godhead, you've got to be free from selfishness. So I just can't understand what it is.
It's the lack of attraction, which comes by hearing. But don't worry if you can't understand it. Just don't. Your question is something like Markandeya Rishi's question. What is the nature of the attraction that keeps us away from, a demigod away from Krishna? You want to find out? Okay. Okay, yeah.
In the 47th verse, we have a wonderful glorification of the name.
Yes.
Even while stumbling, falling, yawning.
Yes.
Similar we have in the beginning, on the very first, I think, 15th or 14th verse of the Bhagavad Gita also starts with a similar glorification of the holy name. At the same time.
Where?
In Yanama.
No, where?
Bhagavatam.
In the first canto?
Yes.
Okay. When did you get it? Yeah, well, those verses are similar, aren't they?
That one is not that exactly the same, but it says that 1.14. Even if one unconsciously or inadvertently accidentally utters the name of Krishna.
What verse number?
1.14. So again, it starts and ends the Bhagavad.
Upon or something, yeah.
My question is that this is something that we are sometimes challenged about by the followers of the Judeo-Christian tradition, in where it's considered to be a great offense.
That's so funny.
And therefore, one should not even utter the name. Some of them say that you should never even utter the name of God. And so, like in a thing in Judaism, it was only one priest who was eligible once a year or something to read the name of God. The temple was the temple of the name of God. So, what can we tell to such people? I think it's even one of the Ten Commandments, if I'm not mistaken.
In vain.
Yeah.
Should not say that, means it shouldn't just say them without proper respect. And, yeah.
And here it says, even if you sneeze or.
How potent is the name of the Lord? Anyway, it's funny, ironical, because there's. My son was just here, and he just showed me this Monty Python clip about this. It was actually really funny. But I guess you have to be part of the culture a little bit. But it was taking place in ancient Israel, and some representatives of the government had this guy in chains, and they said, because you have said the name, the holy name that no one can say, we will stone you to death. And then it's actually quite funny. And then there's all these people there with stones, and then he said, well, all I did was say the name of Jehovah. You know, I said, you know, this food was really good. It's really suitable for Jehovah. Something like that. And I did, and then everyone, you said it again! You should have it again! And someone threw a rock or something like that. No, you can't stone him until I say so. And then he said, well, as long as I'm going to be killed for it, it was so nice, I'm going to just say it again and again. You know, Jehovah, Jehovah, and they started throwing it. And then the person who read it was reading the proclamation. He said, you can't say the name of Jehovah. And then everyone, you said it. And they ended up stoning him to death. Anyway, it was a mockery of this, of that. In other words, what's the point? And you see it, so many people use the name of God as part of a curse, or when they're angry in that way. And the point is obviously you should be respectful to the name of God. So, and he says, hallowed be thy name. There's so many ways where they sing the name of God. So how do your question was how to preach to people who are fanatics?
No.
Well, that's the way I look at that one.
Sometimes even those who are faithful.
Devotees?
Well, nah. Sympathetic then. Anyway, my mother asks this question, and I tell her, sometimes she chants, but sometimes when she doesn't want to, she says, well, we are disturbing him too much.
Well, yeah, I met someone like that daily from yesterday.
Here in Vrindavan?
Yes, it's this funny couple who walks, they face up and down.
Oh, no,
and he's, I mean, they're both very devotional and very much devotees, but he's not chanting because he says that I'm boring him with my uttering all the time. And he is.
Well, then chant with love.
That's what I was telling him.
Well, there's the, in one sense, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it mentions that Bhagavacharya brought up a similar complaint, that if we are all Prakriti and we're all married, if Krishna is ultimately our husband, the wife is not supposed to utter the name of the husband. Very clever. And Mahaprabhu replied, you don't understand. The wife's first duty is to follow the orders of the husband. So you should chant. And that's his order to chant. Okay.